A Supreme Court ruling will change the way campaigns are financed. The Indiana attorney who played a key role in the case. The governor's road plans, why Mike Pence signed a gun bill, and the Obamacare sign-up in Indiana. That, plus Dan Coats at the wrong hearing and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending April 4, 2014.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.
This week, the U.S. Supreme Court struck down limits on the number of political contributions a single donor can make, and an Indiana attorney played a key role. Jim Bopp of Terre Haute was the lead attorney for the Republican National Committee, one of the plaintiffs in the case known as McCutcheon versus the Federal Election Commission. Bopp says it's a triumph for the First Amendment. The overall effect is going to be more money spent by candidates and political parties, he said, and less money spent by third-party advocacy groups like super PACs. Will this ruling change political outcomes in Indiana? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel, Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanes, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, first of all, what will this mean for Jim Bopp's reputation?
Well, it probably will make it a little bit better than it was after his embarrassing performance to try to on HJR3 on the same-sex marriage amendment performance that he did in the legislature, which was embarrassing, to say the least. But this is really a case of blind hogs and acorns. I mean, it was pretty clear from the first Citizens United case that this particular Supreme Court was going to strike down all limits, and they're going to. I think the next attack will be on the ceiling on candidate on individuals giving to individual candidates, and then the next one will be an attack, or maybe not in that order, on any state regulation attempting to deal with campaign limits. So campaign, the role of money in campaigns is going to continue to grow, and I think that's to the detriment of free speech in one sense. The only good news from this point of view is that at least if it goes to a party or to a candidate, they have to disclose where it comes from, whereas with the super PACs at this moment, you can have billionaires funneling hundreds of millions of dollars in a campaign and then hiding behind the not-for-profit banner and not telling people who's paying for those ads.
So what the Supreme Court is saying is that the money in a contribution amounts to free speech, and that's been something that you have long advocated, right?
Yes, I believe that, and I think it's a good ruling. I think that this is the beginning of the end of limitations, not only in Indiana, but in all states and all campaign limits. But that's okay, I think, as long as they disclose every penny. I think that's more important than having super PACs where you don't have to know where the money comes from. And I think that this will lead to that eventually. I don't see this having a tremendous impact on Indiana elections going forward. I just don't think it's going to change the amount that much. But I do think it will lead to more disclosure, and we'll see if that plays out. But this was a good ruling, and I think you're going to see the political parties become stronger because of it.
What we're seeing is what we've just heard here. Republicans like the ruling. Democrats don't. Why is that?
I think the conventional wisdom would be that the thought that the more well-heeled and more politically active patrons of the modern American political system, look at the Koch brothers, for instance, and the hundreds of millions of dollars, for instance, that they have spent in support of Republican politics, And this is a fairly traditional, you have the very wealthy, and again, this is a very broad sweeping generalization, wealthy individuals, business owners supporting Republican candidates. The counterbalance to that has traditionally been unions and the support with PACs that have given to Democratic candidates in large amounts. But I think, based on what we've seen in recent years, there have been any number of as I say, deep-pocketed Republicans who are very generous with their funds.
Will this change the landscape?
Oh, absolutely. I think Ann's assertion and Mike's agreement that it'll probably change across the country any limits on the state level are absolutely true. And it already, when we go back to Citizens United in 2010, you know, the cost of free speech in political realm has become pretty darned expensive since then, and it's only going to get more expensive in that regard. And I think that's unfortunate. I know that Mike holds those views passionately, and I understand that. But when you have to pay money in order to make your message heard, and the average voice can't be heard, then the free speech of the average person is lost, and their right is infringed.
Well, the concern here is that politicians going after the big money will listen to the donors.
There's no question about that. I mean, there's absolutely no question about that. When you have Sheldon Adelson, who puts $100 million in there, and then you have Lindsey Graham getting up and saying we can't have internet gambling because he doesn't want it to happen, I mean, of course they have influence. Anybody who writes a check for $10 million to a political campaign is going to have that candidate's voice and ear. But the other thing that's interesting about that, this is one of the few areas that Indiana's led the country, because we've never had individual limits on campaign contributions here. So the big money's always played a role in Indiana. Ask Mr. White that from Northern Indiana.
Dean White, who's been a big contributor to Mike Pence.
Well, I think the alternative is public financing of campaigns, and I don't think the public wants to finance campaigns.
We haven't seen an appetite for that here.
No, not at all, and I don't see that coming anytime in the near future, that you would spend taxpayer money and decide what it was you were going to spend on individual levels of races. I just don't see it happening
country. What if you made as a condition, I know the broadcasters would hate this, but as a condition of the fact that you hold a license to have a TV station that you'd have to make available time to candidates for the candidate only, not for paid advertisements.
Good luck with that.
Well, I actually think that that would be a positive development.
Maybe it's time to move on to the next question, those of us who work in the media.
This is going to open up some new and different arguments on all sides. Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, are contribution limits a good idea? Your choices are A, yes, or B, no. Last week's question was, who deserves more credit for the GE aviation deal? 9% said Mike Pence, 58% said Mitch Daniels, 33% said both. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. More lanes will be built on two sections of I-65 using the $200 million in additional Indiana highway funds being released this year. Governor Mike Pence announced plans this week to expand I-65 immediately south of Indianapolis and near Lafayette. The General Assembly approved the funds this year. Another $200 million in highway funding is being held pending a review of the state's finances in December.
I mean, in a very real sense, that having the right infrastructure in Indiana is absolutely essential to our people achieving our full potential and the prosperity of our state.
Mike McDaniel, that's major moves money. It comes from the toll road deal made by Mitch Daniel. Who gets political credit for this?
Well, the political credit for this belongs to the governor and the Speaker of the House, who, before the session ever started, said they wanted to spend $400 million now, while the dollars can go as far as they possibly can, rather than waiting till later when they won't be worth as much. And I think that's a good decision. Anytime you invest in the infrastructure, you're ahead of the game. And they've done that here in a highway system, an interstate system, signed into law by President Eisenhower. The highways we're talking about here, Interstate 65 in particular, hasn't been changed in the 50-plus years ago since it's been built. And the heaviest parts of the area where it's traveled the most is what needs it the most, and that's what this is going for. So this is a good investment in the future. It means jobs. It means more about what we've talked about in this show before, about Indiana being a logistical center of this country. And it's a good investment in Indiana's future.
Well, this is money that was set aside for the future, but what they found was with interest rates what they are, they made $13,000 in interest last year. It's kind of a no-brainer to spend it now.
Yeah, the question is what you spend it on. And the irony of this is the only solution that the governor sees for transportation issues is to pave more. I mean, how many lanes are there on 69 around Castleton? Has that alleviated the traffic jam there? The answer is no, okay? We need to look at alternatives here, and he's not even willing to consider that.
Well,
now, I think he's smart to hold on to $200 million, too, given the way the economy in the state is going.
The second $200 million will be spent on I-69
if it's spent.
Yes.
We could just pave all of Castleton and Fishers.
Right.
And then maybe they wouldn't be able to live there, and then we wouldn't have a traffic jam anymore.
This is also
signed into law, the mass transit bill.
Yeah. This is also about
doing
jobs.
Nothing about light rail.
Signed into law.
Let's give John a chance.
Nothing about light
this
rail.
Is also about jobs, right?
Well, it is. It's about supporting jobs that people are currently idle or underworking. They aren't working as much as they could be because, you know, the nature of construction is cyclical. So this is very good for folks who mine the aggregate and make the concrete and lay it and run the machinery. So this is all good news for them. But the thing that's a little disconcerting about this is the lack of attention so far, and I think the legislature is going to address it going forward. But since major moves, there really hasn't been any effort in the legislature to create a comprehensive plan for what we want to do with transportation, which would take into account not just the roads, but also the airports, the ports, and the mass transit needs among the state, and also the high-speed rail initiatives that have been forwarded on a federal level. I think the state needs to do that because major moves allowed us to ignore that underlying question of how we're going to pay for it and what are our priorities. And so I hope that we'll be able to do that going forward.
That's a good point. Now, there are some people, though, who deserve credit who have tried to wrestle that issue to the ground. Ed Soliday, who's the chair of the Transportation and Roads Committee in the House, who has an aviation background, actually, whether there are others there marching along with him, but is somebody who recognizes we need to take, as a state, a larger approach. But this is probably good politics because it does get close to 10,000. The estimate I saw was close to 10,000 people back to work right away. Right. You do have that spillover effect. And it seems to me when you talk about tax dollars and spending, voters and taxpayers, this is a real tangible thing that they can, when they see, they may not like it during the construction phase, but there's something that, I can get where I'm going a little faster and the roads are a little nicer.
I think roads are popular, but one of the other aspects of this comprehensive plan is the fact that in some counties they are grinding up the county roads. They cannot maintain them. And we're going back to basically dirt and gravel there, and nobody's even looking at that prospect.
Let's remember that last session, between what was spent last session, or the session before last, and this session, is almost $800 million
on
roads and bridges.
The spending is great.
I concur that there has to be a master plan going forward about what we're going to do for overall transportation. And I think Representative Soliday and others want to address that, and I think you're going to see that happen. But it's not like there hasn't been a commitment to transportation because they've committed $800 million in 2 years.
In
2 years, there's a commitment there. But also, there's not a long-term commitment to funding these beyond the investments and the money that we're already
producing. You're talking about a need for new gas taxes.
I'm talking about a need to making
else,
sure that
right?
you can pay for these things going forward.
Well, and it's not just about vision and moving forward. Our infrastructure is in horrible shape, generally. So, I mean, a lot of this
but
is
America's
just keeping pace. Correct.
Mike Pence explained why he approved the bill that allows guns in school parking lots. It says the guns must be locked in a vehicle and hidden from sight. Supporters of the bill say the law protects parents who have gun permits. The governor says it was an easy call.
This ultimately struck me as a common sense reform of current law. We just simply don't want a law on the books that would cause parents or other law-abiding citizens to be guilty of a felony simply because they're dropping their child off to school or they're attending a sporting event at the local school. I really do believe this was a common sense reform. I believe the restrictions and limitations that are contained in it are in the interest of public safety, and that's why I supported it.
John Ketzenberger, is it common sense?
Well, I think that people who own guns, by and large, and who are carrying them, if they're taking their kids to school or picking them up, have enough common sense to keep them in a safe place. And so I think that we're really we have a solution in search of a problem here. I don't understand the law. I understand the politics around it, and I understand the people who are against it and the people who are for it. But I really don't think it makes any sense because, you know, when have you heard about somebody who's doing this kind of thing?
There are one or two cases where somebody with a gun permit went to school to check on a child and forgot that the gun was.
And were they prosecuted?
Yes, there's one case in.
And so now they've got to leave it. This wouldn't solve that problem if they were carrying.
Because this law says that they have to leave it in the car and it has to be in a secure car.
That's the difference. That's what's changed.
Okay, so it doesn't. So it is a solution in search of a problem.
Well, any surprise that Mike Pence signed a gun bill?
No, I mean this is a guy who is his political resume and what he likes to promote has often included, probably as long as he has been in office or has sought office, advocacy for Second Amendment rights and gun ownership rights. What I think is telling, Jim, and you made I think a point of this in your blog, was again just this the tone of this. Signing this discussion of this bill, this legislation, versus what we just saw a moment ago, those who were watching on television and saw the video where the banners, you know, major moves, the tone is, there's a notion of excitement. This one, I think, because it's such a politically charged issue and there's much more political division among Hoosiers, his tone, you notice, is very soft-spoken. There aren't the banners. Yeah. There weren't other people standing behind him during the signing.
He's done a nice job, I think, since the legislature ended, of holding ceremonial events, highlighting his successes, while at the same time low-keying certain topics.
Yeah, I think he did it with the right tone. When I got to admit, when I first heard this bill was introduced, and of course I'm down there every day during the session, I thought, what? And then when I actually went to the hearing and listened to the discussion of the thing, basically what they're doing was making the people that do have a right to carry to make them compliant when they go to a school to pick up somebody. And that part of it didn't bother me as much as when I first heard it. And I thought, well, this is a real problem on the you know, get-go here. But it's not. It really isn't.
The Obamacare sign-up deadline produced a last-minute rush in Indiana as well as around the country. 60 people were working at a MedWise call center in Bloomington. That's one of the companies offering insurance on the federal exchange. In just the first hour and a half on Monday, workers fielded more than 700 calls.
You know, we're still going to help them. We're not going to turn anybody away. So as long as the attempts made that, you know, they tried to apply via healthcare.gov, we're still going to take their information and we're going to help them through the process.
Fernando Luna of MedWise there. John Schwanes, do you think Obamacare is more popular here than the governor anticipated?
No, I'm not sure I'd necessarily go that far. If you look at the national numbers from Kaiser Health Foundation, you know, these are somewhat outdated numbers. Back earlier in March, Indiana was running behind the sign-up rate of the national average, which is, I think, 14.8% among eligible individuals versus 12.4%, I think, here. So close, but so you can't say
But what you can say at this point is that we really don't know what the numbers are. The most recent numbers are from March 1st.
Correct.
65,000.
We don't know. Well, the only number we know now nationally is the 7.1 million that the president has touted. I think if you talk about the perceptions and political opinions, there probably will be a warming toward these measures as people derive services. Yeah. That they might not have been able to drive in the past. Now, will that happen between now and November? Probably not. So this is a long-term play, maybe for Democratic political apparatus. Certainly not, I don't think, going to be a benefit between now and November.
But the governor chose not to have an Indiana insurance exchange and an Indiana website. And what we see is is the lesson here that people could still get the insurance they want, or is it that there should have been an Indiana exchange?
Well, I think that's a good question because what we've seen, I think, is that people realize they have to sign up for the insurance or they're going to face huge penalties.
$95 in most cases.
Or 1% of their income. And trust me, that can be a lot of money for a lot of people who need the insurance. There are a lot of people. This is not just a low-income situation. There are a lot of people who have need for insurance. And so what happened here is that by having a federal exchange, you had limited involvement by private insurers, and you had fewer choices for the people who came to the exchange. I think if you look at other places like Kentucky where they had their state-run exchange, there were more choices. There was a more robust market available to people. So I think that's the difference.
But according to the most recent numbers, there were more sign-ups in Indiana than there were in Kentucky. Part of that
it's
is
not
because
the sign-ups. I said there's a more robust marketplace.
Yeah, and part of what that was about was that Kentucky expanded Medicaid and we did not.
Yeah, and so the poorest of the poor who need this coverage the most are not getting it in Indiana. We're going to be an island of uninsured surrounded.
The governor is still pursuing an expansion of the HIMP program.
And the secretary is still working with
it. Can we get it done in our lifetime?
They hope for an answer in May. They hope for an answer in May.
He hoped for an answer in February, too, and in March and all of that.
It's got to come from the Fed.
All he has to do is declare victory. I don't care what he calls it, and go out and do it. But when you talk about job creation, this is a huge factor for job creation. There are private insurers and there are hospitals that are going to be dependent on this, and we're not doing it. And we're throwing those jobs and the millions of dollars the federal government offered to get this up and operating in Indiana away. And that's fiscally irresponsible, which is what Mike Pence has been.
At the very least, there are a lot of unanswered questions.
Well, that's an understatement. The problem is this bill was signed into law 4 years ago.
Right.
In March, I think it was. And what you've got today is not what they signed into law 4 years ago. It's been changed 27 times, either delayed or changed, mostly by executive fiat, okay?
And
it's still being changed.
And the Supreme Court.
And it's still being changed. We had a vote
in
Congress.
And there's
still
Indiana lawmakers calling for repeal of the medical device tax and other changes.
And then you had to vote this week with Todd Young's bill about changing how many hours make a full work week, which passed with Democrats voting for it.
Right.
This is a problem for Obama and for the Democrats going forward, because the more Americans know about this, the more they don't like it.
Yeah, that's
it's
going to
be more expensive.
That is not true.
It's going to be more expensive.
If you like your doctor,
you can keep him. If you like your party, you can keep him. We're not having any of that.
It's going to be a huge issue in November. And we'll find out what the public
thinks. All right.
Moving on. Indiana Congresswoman Jackie Walorski delivered the weekly GOP address. It's the second time she gave the response to the president's weekly address. Walorski talked about a bill to improve services at the Department of Veterans Affairs.
All the things we say about owing our veterans a debt of gratitude, all the promises we make to take care of them, to support them, the VA exists to turn those words into actions. America is a grateful nation. We cannot allow anything or anyone to get in the way of that.
Mike McDaniel, how did she earn a second chance?
Because she's been a champion for veterans' rights and veterans, taking care of the veterans, the people that we owe so much in this country to. We have an obligation to these folks, the men and women who serve this country. And it's a problem. The Veteran Administration has woefully fallen behind in what they can do and what they've processed. A disability claim now, the average wait is 330 days. Yeah. There have been 31 deaths that they think have been preventable because of this backlog. And what they've tried to do here with Republican and Democrat support,
this is a bipartisan effort.
Right, is to make the Veterans Administration more responsible, and it's worth doing.
Yeah. And give them the resources to do what they need to do, which is another big part of the problem.
Right.
So I don't have any quarrel with the message at all. I think that's good. And I think they're actually smart to put a woman forward. After the war on women they did for so many years, they won't put any Republican woman forward.
Well, they're also trying to put a bipartisan message forward.
And they should, because that's the way it'll pass.
Finally, Indiana Senator Dan Coats had a new experience this week. He was asking a question of a witness in a Senate hearing when he learned he didn't belong there.
What is it you're trying to accomplish, and what are some of the consequences of that going to be to the current DFAS system, locations, personnel, et cetera?
Undersecretary Cohn, I just wanted to...
I just got a note saying I'm at the wrong hearing.
Oh, okay.
I've got the right room number, but the wrong hearing.
Well, that would explain why I didn't know anything about this letter.
Well, this is the first time this has ever happened to me, but I hope it's not a precursor of what made
you're always welcome in our committees.
And Delaney, what do you make of that? Is he overworked?
Oh, come on. Cut him some slack. There isn't anybody who hasn't made a mistake, the equivalent of that. But fortunately, most of us don't get on camera when it happens. So just
look,
leave him alone.
Even all of us here on the McLaughlin group, it happens to us all.
Right.
That is the show, isn't it?
He went on Twitter and said the Russians have been messing with my schedule.
I think Putin's messing with him. I really do.
Do you think he has control of his brain now?
Well, after his divorce this week, he's a little out of control.
This is how Putin's
ex-wife's still alive, as far as we know.
Yeah, wow. There you go. Did Coates handle this well?
I think he did, and I agree with everybody. We all could assume that we're, lucky that we didn't have cameras on us when we made that kind of
exactly.
a mistake.
Yeah, don't fault the former staffer who was responsible for this.
Former staffer. I actually don't think that's true. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanes of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.